If Chomsky wants to cuck you, you are in no position to say otherwise.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Friendly Jimmy's podcast with Miss Love, Jordan, and myself, Ali.
And this pen.
This is animate carbon.
Penny, how's the economy? How's the stock market looking today? Gold's dropped in a quarter. One.
Classic zinger from Penny.
So,
if we did this pod long enough, in any given day, to ridiculous hours of the morning, that's the kind of stuff we get to.
Canada has inspired me. I've come around to the idea that there should be a bilingual podcast from now on. So we will be having, from now on, it'll be Ali, Miss Love, Jordan, and Le Pen.
Why don't we start off with that? Like, you say whatever you want in English. Miss Love's going to say it in Croatian, respond to you in Croatian, and I'll respond to you in Urdu.
All right. Yeah, right.
Multilingual.
Also, by the
podcast.
Way, in about 10 minutes, I have to leave this pod.
Bilingual to trilingual in about 5 seconds.
There you go.
We are making moves.
Also, I gotta leave this pod to rock out so the pen will be actually replacing me for, you know, the remainder of the pod soon.
Say that in Croatian.
That's too much. Do the thing you said first.
So, in other words, can you actually speak Croatian?
Yes.
Well, then say it.
Say all of that.
Just say, I'm going to leave the podcast to rock out in whatever that Slavic language you speak is. You said that you're fluent in Croatian, and we've learned very quickly that is not the case.
How to say rock out. All right. Idem svirat za moj band poslije Moramić.
Which is the rock out part, Moramić?
I didn't say rock out. I can't rock out.
What did you say?
Rock out. There you go.
Okay. Which means I am not surprised at all by that.
Damn, that sounded nice. Now, what's Penny got to say?
Yeah, who wins? Who wins the best sounding language? Wait. Jordan, whose language do you think sounds better?
We'll do one more. So. We can't have a conversation. That won't work. What's just a couple of lines we can throw back and forth? What do we say? Like, hi.
Anything you want.
Yeah, anything. It doesn't matter. Just say whatever. Do you want me to start?
Yeah, you just say a bunch of shit. Yeah. Well, that's the only way I can do it. Just roll off something and I'll roll off something. And you decide.
Or kya haal hai sab sahi hai? Kyunki jab se maine tumhe dekha hai tab se
I feel like you're mumbling. Shakal pe
manhusiyat nazar aane lag gayi hai. Can I translate that?
Yeah,
it sounded so weird.
Hey, how are you? You know what's weird? Every time I look at your face, I feel that the world is kind of empty.
Something said in Pakistan every day. All right. What do I say? I'm not going to... Okay. Neću otići u Pakistan zato bojim se za jedan dan ću... I just said I'm scared to go to Pakistan because I reckon one day I'll just be walking in the street and I'll explode.
You've got to be Muslim before you explode.
You know what? I'm calling it now. Are you guys speaking the exact same language?
Dude, does it sound really that similar?
That's weird.
Yours just sounds slightly more Russian.
Yeah,
but
there
is definitely an influence. I mean, look, any area that has land attached is going to have some influence somewhere along the line. I mean, look, Alexander the Great conquered you and you.
Yeah, true.
So something's going on there, right?
Look, to be fair, Alexander pretty much conquered everyone at one point. So
yeah, well, you might be right. You might be right. I mean, like there is definitely a common thread. I mean, it's weird because to me it sounds completely different. But from afar, it's like, I mean, you know, they definitely have like, it's not English.
Can't explain that.
Yeah. You know what's weird? I've actually got like, and this is for my own curiosity. So I'm going to say two phrases and you've got to tell me which one sounds better. And I'll tell you why I am doing this. Okay. So the first phrase goes, marriage up gaya wahan pe to meri to halat kharab ho gayi. That's one. Okay.
Why do you guys mumble?
Listen to me. One second. So the second phrase is, داغ سجود اگر تیری پیشانی پر بھی تو کیا وہ سجدہ کر جو زمین پہ نشان پڑے. Which one aesthetically sounds better? And I'll tell you why I'm doing this.
A.
I was going to say A. B. I was going to say B.
Yeah? Okay. Right, keep going.
So the reason is...
I think B is Portuguese.
The first phrase that I said was... I don't remember what I said. But it was said in an accent and in a particular choice of language, which is considered to be crass. And people say that it sounds horrible. The second phrase that I said was actually a really famous old couplet, which if you say that in front of someone that speaks the language, you'd be like, oh my God, you speak so beautifully.
Yeah, I
hear
that.
So that's why I wanted to know which one actually sounds better to the objective person.
How did you know that the B one sounded better?
Because it did. It sounded it sounded more lyrical. It flew more.
Clearly, well, there's not that much of a difference.
But there is. Do it again.
Okay. The first one, main ja raha tha aur aa gaya to pareshan ho gaya. The second one, daag sujood agar teri peshani par bhi to kya wo sajda kar jo zameen pe nishan rahe.
Yeah, it's the second one.
The second one. Actually, here the second one's come. A really cool phrase. I'll tell you what it means. It just says like, you know how like if people are you... Okay, yeah, so Miss Love's bouncing off.
I'm gone.
So this...
Kenny's replacing me.
This multilingual game is now dead because Mr. Jordan here can only speak one language. How lame.
And pay this, boys. It's the only one you need.
It's true. We're both speaking that language.
I'm leaving. I'll catch you guys next week. I'm leaving my powers to an inanimate pen, and I think it'll do better.
Yeah, me too as well. Let's see how it goes.
High hopes.
This may be the last time that Miss Love leaves. Well, it definitely won't be the last time that he leaves midway through a podcast, if you can say as well. That is his style.
Dude, you know what?
Hey, I'm Jordan.
Because some things are more important than doing your job, which is to go and play guitar
just
with
leave
a guy that is constantly complaining about his biggest gripe in life being that he can eat 3 Big Macs in a row and not gain weight.
Leaving us like a black dad. Is that too racy? That's something.
Well, just in general. No, this is across the races. But is it across the race thing? It's just a deadbeat dad, and no. Miss Love is going to excel at that. You're going to be so good.
I'm just carrying on the act of buying whole wheel bread for my kid that my dad did for me. Because I'm passing it on to you
Get
guys.
Get some Turkish bread.
I love you guys. I really don't know what's better, just leaving with curry paste and bread or replacing your job with a pen. Like, they're really on par. You have learned from the best, Miss Love. I'll give you that. Enjoy rocking out.
We'll see you next week. I'll rock out doubly hard.
See you, Miss Love. The audience says bye as well.
What a cunt.
So we're going to move on to our first segment. Before I do that, I'll translate the last phrase that I said because I think it's a cool little couplet.
The first part
was just like, hey, how you going? I was just saying it in an accent. It was considered crass. The second part was a famous saying, which is that, you know how when Muslims pray, they put their forehead on the ground?
Mm-hmm.
So have you ever seen Muslims that have like a little black spot on their face, on their forehead?
Yeah.
That's from like constantly rubbing against the ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this couplet is basically saying that who cares, even if you have that mark on your forehead, I would appreciate it if you did something so colossal that you left the mark on the ground.
That's too poetic for my brain. So what does that say?
It just means that like it doesn't matter if you've got like a mark on your forehead. If you want to be really remembered, then do something so important that you leave a mark on this world.
Oh, okay. So essentially it's encouraging you to not be a good Muslim.
Yeah, is that kind of. You know what's crazy?
I don't understand your culture at all.
No, but it's all religious.
Isn't that sentence blasphemy?
This is the kind of. So this is the best thing about like Urdu language, which is the language that I speak. So most languages around the world,
right,
their poetry starts off with pleasing the status quo, right?
Mm.
So whether it be hymns of like praising God, praising whatever, the king, blah, blah, blah. Urdu poetry is, interestingly, I think the only one that I know of where this foundation is based on anti-religiousness or like or rationalist positions and against the status quo and the government. So most of
why
like
is
the
that?
Really good. I think it was it was developed around an area where most of the intelligentsia of India lived at one point. Mm. And so naturally their ideas were a little more intellectual.
Ooh, okay. So your language is like if Da Vinci invented a language.
Yeah. So if you, so that's why, like, if
reverse mirror language. Oh, no, anyway, yeah, the point is that yours is the man in the mirror language. Yeah, you should be very proud of that.
Which is quite literally because it's writes the other way.
Oh, my God.
Anyways, let's move on to our first segment. So this was, a Discord recommended segment. So we've got
don't know what that is, but thank you very much for doing so.
Discord?
I don't really know what a Discord is.
I kind of don't either, but like we've got a thing and I look at it sometimes and I'm trying to understand it. So this is one of the, and Matt, our house podcast editor, is active on it, and he gives me like feedback of like what people are talking about. So the one is that, talk about the upcoming recession. First of all, there's an assumption based in it.
Why do you want to know about that? First off,
do you think that there is a recession coming?
It's just evident in the figures. In fact, the IMF just came out the other day and said, and pretty much did exactly what the UN did to the Great Barrier Reef status and downgraded it to very poor.
Damn, this is the clock that Chomsky talks about all the time. Well, there's a nuclear clock at every time.
Yes. And it's 2 minutes to midnight.
In fact, when Trump was inaugurated, they moved it to 2 seconds before doomsday. Anyway, so they downgraded
it. At the end of the world.
I'm 95. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, and does he have to?
He does not.
He's been living on borrowed time for 15 years.
Do you know
his wife died a long time ago, man.
He remarried pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I've got to say, retiring at 95. Talk about pushing the envelope.
I feel like he was kind of glad his wife died.
Why?
Like that marriage was real quick, and then he straight away moved from Massachusetts to Arizona, like to enjoy the sunny weather with my new Brazilian wife.
Is she Brazilian?
Yeah, she's Brazilian.
Of course she
is. Dude, she's not. She's not like. Imagine if he was like a Hugh Hefner type character married a 25-year-old. She's not 25. She's old. But
how old is she?
Well, that's the thing. Chomsky is very, very old. So for him, she's still a young catch. I don't know. She's probably like 50? 60.
60.
Yeah.
What a cradle snatcher.
Dude, if Chomsky asked me to marry him, I'd probably do it.
Yeah, me too as well.
Be like, yes, sir. In fact, if I met with the hottest woman in the world and Chomsky was like, I want to have sex with her, I would really convince her to please have sex with this man for the greater good. He, if nothing, he deserves some top quality puss.
Yeah, you're exactly. Look, as usual, Ali, you're hitting all the hard truths and you're not sugarcoating it. If Chomsky wants to cuck you, you are in no position to say otherwise. Are you the most impressive professor alive?
Yeah.
The answer is no. Let him bone.
That's actually, it's funny. I was watching Howard Stern interview David Spade, and David Spade had
the other great intellectual of our times. And I kind of do think that. I'm a huge fan of David Spade.
Dude, he was saying that he was dating, what's her name? That like anorexic actress that was big for a bit. Lara Flynn Boyle. Do you know what
I'm
talking
about? Is she the one from Ally McBeal?
She's the one from Men in Black. That's the only movie of hers that I know of. Anyways, the audience knows, it doesn't matter. So he was dating her. David Spade was dating Lara Flynn Boyle, and she was like a catch at the time. So they went to a party where Jack Nicholson was there too, and Jack Nicholson was like, David, let's go, I don't know, like a smoker, let's hang out or something, right? And then he told David Spade, I'm gonna ask out your girlfriend.
No.
to which David Spade's response was, okay, that's cool. He does ask her out. David Spade's girlfriend, Lara Flynn Boyle, comes to him and says, you didn't even put up a fight. Why did you just allow him? And David Spade was like, look, let's be real. He's cooler than me. He's richer than me. He's more famous than me. And I overall think he's a better guy. And then to which Lara Flynn Boyle says, I would never do that. You know that. Literally 3 days later, she ditched David Spade and started dating Jack Nicholson.
Are you kidding?
True story. Narrated by the man himself. I feel like that's...
And that's why America fell in love with Spade. He is actually the only American celebrity I know that puts shit on himself. You know any of the other ones? And it really works. As in, when he's on Bill Maher's show, he brings the house down. And it's never a smug laugh either. He's just constantly talking about how pathetic of a human being he is. And it's self-evident. So he's just, he's calling fouls and hits as they come along. And there's just a lot of fouls in his life.
Are you saying you like David Spade?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of David Spade.
Do you like Owen Wilson too?
I'm not going to go that far. That's, I mean, look, I'm a huge fan of Luke Wilson. But, and I am, actually. I don't like Owen Wilson, but I do like Luke.
And you would have loved him, too, if you weren't such a shitty friend in Adelaide and would have watched the entire Blue Streak with me, starring Luke Wilson and Martin Lawrence.
What was Blue Streak again?
It was the movie with Dave Chappelle and Martin Lawrence that you saw 10 minutes of, like, oh, I don't want to watch.
Oh, yeah, this is shit. Let's watch Bear Grylls.
No, I was going to watch Blue Streak. Dude,
no, that's what I'm saying, though. It was just like, that was a, all right, look, I'm just going to have to call myself out on this one. That was a really poor choice, Jordan, and you should hang your head in shame.
Exactly. It's one of the greatest movies of all time. Stars Dave Chappelle, Martin Lawrence, and Luke Wilson. All the kings. The Holy Trinity.
Well, look, 2 out of 3 of those I'll give you, but they are not the three kings that visited Jesus of the modern day. It is definitely David Spade, Dave Chappelle, and I don't know who the third one is, but it's certainly not Martin Lawrence.
Man, I feel
Let me just counter this with you. Have you ever laughed at anything Martin Lawrence has ever done? No. That's a stupid question,
I've laughed at things that have happened to Martin Lawrence. Like, there was a time when he took out a gun, he started walking around his block naked and started saying, "They're coming after me." That was pretty funny.
In real life.
Yeah.
Who, the Illuminati?
Apparently. Dude, who knows? They never know who they is.
Right, okay. Well, I feel like people in Hollywood actually have a really good grasp on who they is.
Us.
Yeah, who? Okay, now I'm getting really confused about this, but
would you be freaked if, like, I don't know, like, George Soros or someone was saying, "It's the Illuminati that are doing this. You don't know, man." It's like, I thought you were the Illuminati.
Oh, man, yeah, and that's really what I think when I look at Martin Lawrence. I think Illuminati globalist shill, and the fact that he's scared walking around naked with a gun. I mean, if he's doing that, I feel like he has a really good reason for that. Either that or, you know, I don't know, this is just what I hear about Hollywood, but apparently, Ali, they take drugs there. So, but this is just all for you to say, I can't say for a fact. The question.
There's a wrong rumor that drugs are rampant in Hollywood.
Do you ever think, first of all, has this ever occurred to you when you think about Martin Lawrence, how profoundly untalented that man is? He seems to be the Tom Ballard of black people you could get any other black person and they'd be funnier than him. I went to Popeye's Chicken in Georgia once. And everybody that was working there, I was thinking, you would definitely be a better rapper than T.I. Easily. You've got more attitude, more flavor. Why aren't you famous? That's what I think every time I look at Martin Lawrence.
I think I only remember once. I judge a comedian based on their stand-up. That's the best way. I feel like in terms of like movies and writing, there's a lot of other people that can contribute to it. I feel like you can judge a comedian on stand-up. So I remember his one stand-up. I can't remember what it was called, but he was wearing a black garbage bag in this stand-up. And that was the only good bit about it. The rest of the stand-up kind of sucked. But as a kid, I loved Martin Lawrence, and I loved Martin Lawrence movies. But I also loved Adam Sandler movies, so I was a jackass.
Right.
So I don't know if he's good or not. That's what I'm saying. I'm clueless.
No, but that is a really fair analysis, I think, that he is the Adam Sandler. He is ethnic Aaron Sandler. Black Adam Sandler. And he really is. Honestly, there's all these 90s films that you go, "Oh, yeah, let's watch that." You put it on and you realize, oh, it's been 30 minutes and no one's cracked a smile. The whole aim of this movie, the only reason it exists is to get one of these. Duh! Fails. Fails at that. How do some things get greenlighted for hundreds of millions of dollars? Which is, I mean, look, I don't know how much Bad Boys was, but there was a lot of explosions in that.
Damn, and they're coming out with a new one too.
With Martin Lawrence? Yeah, please, again. God, no.
Martin Lawrence and Will
Smith.
No,
not that caramel night. Chick. Okay, good, thank God. Well, at least they're not sullying that by just being like, "Oh, did you know that a black woman can play this?" Yeah, they can. The proviso is they can't do it well.
What the fuck do you mean?
MIB3.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Wait, anyway, the recession. Remember, there's a recession headed towards us. I'll give you like my take on it.
Yeah, and it is
first.
A result of them cucking movies. That's my analysis. What's the next point?
I'll give you like my understanding of the upcoming recession as well. So first of all, for those of you that have that study or have studied economics, you would know like recessions and booms are a normal thing. It happens all the time. It's a cyclical nature. So when you hit a boom, then you go down.
It doesn't have to be.
And then the way capitalist system works, it does end up happening this way, right?
It does end up happening that way.
However, the recession isn't the 2008 recession. A recession is something that most people don't even notice. The difference with Australia is, and the reason why like we've had this constant, like almost two decades of growth.
Three.
It's because, and like as much as like Australians like hate to admit it, because of China. Dude, China was growing at an immense rate.
Hey, and we were give Hawke Keating their dues.
No, but what I'm saying is like without China, we would not have had three decades of continuous growth.
I'm saying that without Keating and Hawke, we wouldn't have had three decades of continuous growth.
Maybe it takes two to tango. But what I'm saying is like without China, that wouldn't happen because you need someone to buy your shit constantly, right? So when a country
is
growing at like a 13-14% growth rate, which is unheard of in the history of civilization. No one has ever achieved that level of consistent growth rate for decades. So every time,
what about
growing,
say when Rome invaded all of Spain, for instance? Surely the growth rate went at 13 or 14%.
I mean, look, it might have been for a short burst,
yeah,
but not at this consistent rate. Consistent rate to the fact where, like, well, think of it this way: at the time,
fine, I will.
During Rome,
yeah,
the entire world's population was pretty much equal to the entire population that China brought out of poverty in like a decade. Do you know what I'm saying? Like the magnitude is so much more big. Anyways, so what I'm saying is like this continuous Chinese growth has enabled Australia to continuously grow too. And not only did we benefit from it, again, read some of the facts, and like people don't like to admit this, but the reason why after 2008 we didn't go into a global depression was because China fucking bailed out the entire world.
Yeah,
they started buying shit at an exponential rate because they knew if they didn't do that, the entire world economy is going to collapse, which it already did, but it was going to become a depression. And they didn't do it out of like charity or like good heartedness. They knew in order for them to sell shit, they need to buy shit at this point so that people that are going to buy their shit are able to afford their shit.
But what I will add to this, because this is the point that everybody always brings up every time you say that Kevin Rudd saved us from the recession. They always say, no, they didn't. China did. No, China set the global economic conditions so that we didn't go into a depression. We just went into a steep recession. You give them those dues. But the simple fact is, the fact that they're sitting there going, oh, it's because China bought all of our minerals. Oh, okay, so that explains why Brazil went into recession. That explains why most of the Middle East went into a recession.
But Brazil went into recession after Chinese economy slowed down. So that's, again, that's where you get like this exponential growth of Brazil too.
Yeah, but Australia didn't.
You had a good leader like Lula that was able to facilitate that growth for Brazil. I'm not saying that if China is over there, all the countries are going to do well. Clearly, a lot of countries didn't do well. A country like Pakistan, for instance, that has immensely close relations with China, couldn't benefit shit. You know why? Because we didn't have Hawke, we didn't have Rudd, and we didn't have Keating, and we didn't have Lula. Right? So I'm not saying that without these great leaders of your own, but a leader needs something to work with, you know?
No, obviously.
And so China allowed that. What I'm saying is this. My estimation is that this recession that is headed is a cyclical recession, which happens all the time. If it weren't, let's say if I was wrong, then we're in deep shit.
Are you talking about a global recession or are you talking about a national?
I'm talking about like an Australian one. I think there's a global recession too because our economies are so intermixed that often there's a domino effect. But I'm not talking about a Great Depression. Here's the thing. If we were to have a 2008 like recession now, you have no idea how fucked we are. Because for one, China isn't growing at the same level. Instead of 14%, it's now at 7% and is looking at its own domestic market. So we don't have China to bail us out with. All of the tools, and I actually don't understand this point too well. However, I've been listening to like these lectures by Christine Lagarde, the IMF. So all of them have one thing to say, which is that if we were to have a 2008-like financial recession now, we are screwed because all of the tools that we used to get out of the 2008 financial recession have now been exhausted.
Yeah.
Now, can you like elaborate on exactly what that means? What sort of tools? And if they are exhausted, why can't we use them again?
Well, a lot of it is to do with quantitative easing. So basically, they just devalued the currency and just pumped the economies with money.
So why can't we do that again?
Because you can't devalue a currency by that much.
Okay, that makes sense.
Well, this is exactly what happened in ancient Rome.
Yeah.
And is also what happens in Zimbabwe. It just hyperinflation kicks in because then you just have too much money and it's just completely worthless. Now what they're trying to do is now the last tool, the last trick that they have up their sleeve is negative growth. Which is, and they're trying to use Australia as a guinea pig for this because they're saying that you have this huge housing boom, one of the biggest housing booms in world history, easily the biggest housing, bubble, easily the biggest housing bubble in the world right now by a huge margin. What we want you to do to continue growth in your country is allow negative growth to kick in, which is why there was that law that they tried to pass just a few months ago about banning cash in Australia, which is... You know, that's economic dictatorship. That's essentially saying that you aren't allowed to have any money that isn't concentrated in large financial institutions. Now, obviously, all the banks were on board with this, but there was such a negative response to it that the Liberals kicked it down the line to about 2022 and hoping to just pass it in the dead of night like they did last time. But there was, to his credit, a Liberal Party wolfhound in the Treasury. And he is a sack of shit. I see him walking around Bondi all the time and I just think, what a little rodent you are. He's got those little rat teeth out in front. But anyway, sorry. I usually go into appearances of people because I am just half political commentator, half Australia's Next Top Model judge.
Yeah, you're just like a mum. You're like an eastern suburbs mum that sits there and like, that nose is too big for my liking.
Oh, it is. And I readily admit this. You will never see my face age. I might look like a space lizard, but it's not going to look old. Yeah. Anyway, but
the gap between the rich and poor is too large. Really? Is it as big as the gap between your teeth?
I'm just saying it sounds better if it's coming out of a different face.
Yeah.
So I do believe all of that. That's all important. But
so
also what's important
is the
fact
that... So do you think like a big recession is headed towards us?
It's look, the re-election of the Liberal government has guaranteed that. I 100% believe this. And it's because they... The big reason that it's happening, and it's always the same reason. If you look at all the major recessions that happen, it's always because of housing. And it's just because there's too much money invested into housing. I think in the last year, or the year before that, housing grew from $4 trillion to $6 trillion in Australia. It jumped to about 20% of all the money in Australia in housing, doing nothing. It's just sitting there pooling into it.
I'm gonna sort of push back on that one because I know even so. For example, like my law professor, she's this Israeli chick. She teaches me contracts, and she's very educated, and she's also done like a shitload of shit in economics. And she actually has the same opinion as you. She was saying that the housing market's gonna collapse. So I'm not saying that what you're saying is wrong. I'm just saying like, here's a few factors. If the housing market is going to go down, it is not nearly going to go down as much as you think. So, for instance, Australia keeps getting immigrants, right? So there's a certain pool of people that come in every year that are looking to get places, right? So there's so that pushes up your demand. Secondly,
which is too high to begin with.
Which is too high, but somehow they're getting it, right? So it's not high enough.
What do you mean it's not high enough?
What I'm saying is like, look, the price of something is what the market is willing to sell it or buy it at. If it was any lower or higher, the price would go with it. So that's the supply and demand rule. Now, I understand that you can artificially...
It's so much more complicated than that.
I understand that you can artificially inflate the prices. If you've got a few big people, they can buy a lot of shit and to drive up the price, sell it and get out. That's what a lot of these vultures do with big pockets. So I'm not saying that that's the supply and demand is like... I'm not Adam Smith here. I know I live in 2019 and I know a lot more since then. But what I'm saying is that I do not think... that the housing market is going to collapse the way you and a lot of other people might think it's going to. Because I think that there is, first of all, there is a global movement towards centralization of people, right? So people from rural areas all over the world, doesn't matter, in first world, second world, third world, are moving towards the city. So in our case, people from rural New South Wales, blah, 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 are moving towards centers. They're either going to Brisbane, they're either going to Melbourne. Secondly, Brisbane prices are still not that high. What we're really talking about when you talk about like exuberant prices, we're talking about the Sydney market. In Sydney, if you go 50 kilometers out of the city and you buy some shitty little place in Schofields, which is basically Lithgow, that house is $800,000. That is insane.
Yeah.
So that's the inflation that we're talking about. You go to Brisbane and you go to like 20 kilometers off of the thing, you still get like a madhouse for $400,000-$500,000.
Mm.
So it's also the bubble that we're talking about is concentrated in Sydney. And I think...
And Melbourne. And actually Perth too, you give it his dues. No,
I don't know
though,
about Perth
yeah.
that much, to be honest. I don't know anything about Perth's housing prices and its dynamics. What I'm saying is like, okay, so if it was, even if there was a collapse and these people that were hoarding or holding all of these properties, empty properties, were to go, then, okay, so an $800,000 house might be $600,000. I don't think it would even be that. I think you're looking at like an $800,000 at lowest going $700,000 a year.
Look, all I know is when you read the Prosper Australia reports, they say that the price of houses is overinflated. The property bubble is overinflated by about 30 to 40% in Melbourne and Sydney. Now, Melbourne and Sydney combined, their population is more or less half the country. It's about 10 million people in a population of 25 million people. That is where most of the housing is. And there is way too much money in housing. So if the price drops by 30 or 40%, which is what they're saying it's overvalued by, and they're always saying this thing, it's just like, oh, there's just not enough houses. There is enough houses. They're just they're holding them purposefully vacant, sometimes by as much as 18% in suburbs. So one in every five houses is kept deliberately vacant to artificially increase
to
the value,
the price,
which is why we have that huge
practice,
property
yeah.
bubble. Because they won't put in a vacancy tax, they won't put in a land tax. And yeah, obviously the Liberal Party, because of their property developer donors, is just allowing things like negative gearing and capital gains tax to go worse. So it's just every possibly bad thing is happening to the housing market at once, which is that they have such a stranglehold on the federal government collectively, these huge property investors, that they are first off pushing in all the they're demanding something to the likes of $12 billion a year in subsidies that are just getting pumped in from the Australian taxpayer that should be invested in things like education and tourism and things like that. If you're trying to build an economy, you shouldn't be putting it in houses. That is the most ridiculous investment you could possibly imagine. Because
no, but you know, it's not ridiculous. It's not ridiculous because of people like us. So we always look. Here's the thing: when you're growing up in like where whatever city you're in, what's the one big ticket item that every person wants to get, no matter what your economic standing is, and ends up going getting through their lifetime, right?
And
houses,
yeah.
So the reason why they invest that money into houses is because of people like us, because they know that we're always going to want a house.
No, I know that. It's a great investment. Yeah. It's not a good economic strategy to be encouraging housing speculation.
No, because it's not sustainable growth. Actually, it just collapses.
And it causes
and, yeah,
every major recession since the 20th yeah. century.
But it's smart on their end, is what I'm saying. If you want to make a lot of money, you know that this is a good place to invest because many other people. What I'm saying is like, this is what I'm thinking. Every time we've had a global recession, you go all through history, usually the recession starts somewhere where we're not looking. It ends, so like the 2008 housing crash, we weren't looking at housing. We thought housing, or the U.S. economy thought that housing was one of the most stable areas. They thought that the recession might end up somewhere else, like share market or whatever. The thing is, it has a trickle effect and affects every other aspect too. What I'm saying is, if, let's say, in that scenario where the Australian housing market collapses, I can guarantee you one thing, that is not going to start from housing. That's going to start somewhere else and it'll end up in housing.
Yeah, I can imagine that because it just becomes so unaffordable to the vast majority of people.
Exactly.
But you know what
I
think,
actually. And that is the only way. So no matter if you're getting immigrants, you're getting people, they just don't have the money to buy it.
It's a perfect storm, though, because the Liberals have allowed savings in just the time that they've been in power, right? Savings, on average, amongst the Australian population has decreased by 60%. The average Australian has 60% less savings in their bank accounts since Liberals have gotten into power. And that is because they are suppressing wages in this country.
You know what's also like, just to compliment that, that's true for households. Do you know what's even more fucked up? Thanks to all of these tax cuts that we keep giving, the governments keep giving at times when we feel like there's going to be insecurity, so is the government. We have little savings.
Yeah.
Right?
We don't have any savings. We're deeply in debt.
Not only, even if we, let's say if like the Liberals artificially tried to like say that we have this amount of saving and we're in surplus, the ability for governments to source money has also drastically decreased because we keep giving people tax cuts.
Mm.
So these tax cuts, anyways, you can continue, but like these tax cuts are a band-aid that end up becoming horrible because we've put in so many band-aids that when it comes to like a real big bone structure where we need a fracture or a plaster, we don't have the money to do it because we kept putting band-aids on everything.
Anyways, go on, sorry.
So the household income is like 60% less, which...
And the way that's all, yeah, and it's mostly because the entire, I think it's like more 51% of the population now is in casualized work, or casualized work isn't a good word for it, insecure work. So they don't actually have a stable job, and those are becoming rarer and rarer because the Liberals are rigging the labor force due to weak unions and the fact that they've been in government for so long now that they are making the Australian public poorer. Simultaneously, the property investors in this country are artificially driving up housing. So wages have stagnated, and this is the first time in 30 years that wages have stagnated in this country, while price of housing sometimes increases by 20% in a single year. Mm. So, yeah, it's like a duplicitous effect, but it's definitely, housing is a huge problem. And I think that even if you did have suppressed wages, but you just kept housing at a flatline rate, it'd at least help the economy. But the thing is that like once this housing bubble crashes and you have 20% of your money in housing, and then all of a sudden 30 to 40%, and then, you know, like let's just say that it's like half the money, and it's probably even more than that because most of the value of housing is in Sydney and Melbourne, as you pointed out, and in the other capital cities, I suppose, as well. And it does have, just like in the economy larger, it does have knock-on effects to these regional areas and these other cities in terms of their pricing. But when those two cities collapse, when the bubble inevitably bursts and you have 30 or 40% of the money in 20% of Australia's total money just disappearing overnight, essentially half, but let's just say conservatively it's a third. So you have a $6 trillion industry that, and I'm talking overnight in terms of, you know, economic cycle standards. So over the span of a year, it goes from $6 trillion to $4 trillion. So in total, the population is just 30%
of the entire country's wealth.
No. You lose 30% of a fifth of the country's wealth, and then people just go, "Oh, that's not that much money." That is a huge amount of money to just disappear. It's not like it just doesn't, like, you know, it just stays in banks or something. It just doesn't exist anymore. It's just wiped from the books.
That is horrible. Because if you think about it this way, Australia's growth rate is close to like, I don't know, like 2%. At best, 2.5%.
And what is that? Because let's just figure this out for a second, right? Because there's probably about $36 trillion in the Australian economy. Something along the lines of that. $36, $40 trillion. You're wiping out $2 trillion overnight. Like, just vanishes. Complete Houdini act.
So what is that?
That's 5%. Negative 5%. Yeah. That's going to have knock-on effects.
When we talk about, like, the growth rate going from 2.5% to 1.75%, that's when we say, oh, shit. We're in a recession.
Yeah.
If the entire housing market depreciates by 30%, that is going to fuck this country up badly.
Yeah, I know. And this is the other thing. It's going to have these huge knock-on effects of everybody just panicking and going, oh, shit, my house isn't worth any money anymore, and I have these huge mortgages that I have to repay back to the banks, and my house is – I have a useless asset now, and I still have to pay back money to the banks now.
And I don't have the and because of the collapse, I don't actually have the means to pay back the bank anyways, because I'm getting laid off from my job all the time.
Which means that those houses will be defaulted on. Yeah. And then on top of that, so then all of the investments of all these people that have been putting this money into it, it was just a house of cards. So they don't have investment anymore. So that starts losing all of the money, and the money just starts getting sucked up into the banks. But the banks have these worthless assets now that they paid a lot of money for.
So and the speculating banks start defaulting.
So they start making a run. This is how these recessions work. And the thing is that all the global, all the national economists are saying the same thing. It's just when that IMF, I never heard that the IMF lady said that, but that was what they were saying about the 2008 global financial crisis, which was that Kevin Rudd did everything he could to stabilize the economy. And the fact that they didn't rectify these problems, the fact that the Liberals just sat there and exacerbated these problems for the next 9 years, we're out of tricks. And now the economy is going to default in a worse way than it would have in 2008. Because it's just like the problem was propped up. It was like what happened in Fukushima once the tidal wave hit, right? That they quote-unquote stabilized the core reactors. They didn't stabilize them at all. They stopped them from going into a full mode meltdown. But the thing is that, like, if there's another tidal wave, that's the end.
Yeah,
that's and there will be another tidal wave.
And actually, that is such a good metaphor for the world economy, too. 2008 isn't fixed. They just stabilized it.
Yeah.
But if there was another hit, it would collapse much worse because the fucking foundations are so flimsy.
Yeah.
Because after 2008, we literally just kept it floating.
Yeah.
We didn't fix it or anything. This isn't like a post-World War II re-engineering of the economy. It was a Band-Aid.
Exactly. And this is the whole problem. And everybody always...
And we put a little Band-Aid on it.
Yeah.
But if there was a massive hole, we're fucked because our balloon is like weak now.
Well, that's what they say. This is what everyone always goes, why didn't the Labour Party fix it? Because these are huge structural reforms that take a decade to implement. And you fucks gave them 3 years and then said, why isn't it fixed? And voted them out on problems that weren't their problem. Like, you voted them out on imaginary reasons, and you voted in a government that has done nothing to help the situation. They've done everything they possibly can to make it worse, and you voted them in on this election. Essentially what the Labour Party was saying to the public, and they were too stupid to decipher the code, was that these subsidies have to end. That is step one. Step one, you cannot have negative gearing and capital gains tax anymore. You can't be incentivizing the public to eat the economy out from the bottom. You have to be able to incentivize the money to be going into investments. Now, this is what I think, and this is what the UN thinks as well. I've been doing a lot of research into this because I'm just so anti-nuclear for the reasons specified in a recent podcast. But now, what I've come to the conclusion of as a result of looking into that, renewables is an incredible investment. And I think that everybody should be putting their money that they were going to be putting into an investment property, because that's not going to be a thing anytime soon. You're going to have a holiday house, but it's not going to be an Airbnb soon. But what is going to be built, regardless of how the economy is faring, is a new power source, because we need that new power source. And it's just so much more economic. And the new predictions that are coming out is just with our 30% power grid, even if we didn't have 100% power in renewable energy, just with 30%, which is what it's jumping from in the next 2 years, 19 to 35%. That's going to save the Australian economy $100 billion over the next...
I honestly think that's what's going to save the world economy, not just the Australian.
Well, that's what the UN is predicting.
Because I can be sure, and I am I can bet my left nut on this one. There's only two areas that will actually salvage the world from a depression again, because like we mentioned before, like the 2008 was a patchwork, right? It hasn't been fixed, and one is investment in green renewables, because we know that is. Like, not only does it save the climate, but it's also such a new source of power, and the entire world's energy grid will be dependent on it, that this entire makeover will up the economic activity significantly.
Because of how much cheaper it is. It's like a quarter the price of coal and nuclear.
But like the whole investment to move it from a fossil fuel-based system to a renewable system is going to require a lot of investment and spending, which isn't a bad thing. It means that a lot of people that are supposed to face this housing collapse are going to be able to earn enough money to be able to pay their banks, right? So it's going to allow for the property market not to collapse. So that whole transition is going to be a good thing. The second is obviously the fourth industrial revolution, right? Which is the technological
AI.
Yeah, AI and like just these tech companies. So the 2008, I think, financial crisis symbolized pretty much the nail in the coffin for the banking industry.
Yeah.
I think the banking industry is now not as we knew it then.
Yeah, they're running on borrowed time now.
So now the new banking industry, the Wall Street, you know what's funny? The Wall Street isn't even the Wall Street anymore. Like most people don't know this. Most of those companies, they sort of moved out. That if the Wall Street not being Wall Street, that symbolizes death of the financial world, right?
Mm.
The new bankers are these tech giants.
Mm.
And for the foreseeable future, until, you know, we'll probably be dead by then, but the generation after, so the generation after that, we'll probably see the death of this tech movement as well. But for now, yeah, green renewables and AI and tech revolution is the only thing that can salvage the world.
And it doesn't take that much investment. This is what's so insane about this technology and how many favors are being done by governments like the US and Australia to keep a source of energy that is this cheap, that is this advantageous to the economy, away from being transferred into being 100% renewable. The technology exists to do it today. It existed 10 years ago to do it. The thing is, it would take to have 100% energy grid, and this is what's really exciting about it, and I'm going to be pushing this with my audience constantly. I'm going to be constantly reminding them of this, is that for us to have 100% renewable energy in this country, it would require 7% of superannuation investment in this country to be invested in renewables. So if you change your super account to one that invests purely in renewables, like Future Renewables or I can't remember what the other one is called, but there's two superannuation funds that invest purely in green technology. And if 7% of the population moved into that, we would have 100% renewable energy grid, and you would be saving the economy, you'd be saving the environment, and you would have a stable investment. They get a return of about 10 to 12% a year. You ask any financial investor, they'll say, give me the money. But the point is, they won't be able to get you a return of 10 to 12%. That is something that anyone who is worth their weight will be like, invest in that. That is an incredible, stable investment.
I agree. And you know what's sad? That a 30-year-old something YouTuber with his pants unzipped is the one who is supposed... This investment, you know, it's great. Like, if we invest in supers that, like, solely invest in renewables, that's mad. But the sad thing is that all of this investment needs to come from the government. The government savings needs to go in funds that invest in super
energy.
No,
but this is the genius thing about Anthony Albanese. People don't understand his vision, and it's because he was just in the infrastructure portfolio for so long, sitting on his hands because he couldn't do anything. And instead, they just had, I don't know, Chris Pine going, another highway? Yeah, privatize it instantly. That sounds like a good idea. But he was saying that the only way we're going to get out of this, and this was the genius foresight, and everybody's always shitting on the idea of superannuation, but it is a very, very clever idea because it forces the Australian public to invest money in superannuation, and it takes huge quantities of their money and makes it, I don't know, whatever superannuation is. What is it, 9%? 9% of the nation's earnings, and makes this kind of future fund that if it was properly managed – could be diverted into making all kinds of future investments. And this is the thing that Anthony Albanese understood, which was that he was saying the thing that Australia needs is infrastructure. Obviously, every country constantly needs more infrastructure being built. We don't have the funds for it, but superannuation does. We don't have the funds for it because John Howard so poorly mismanaged the mining boom. But the thing is, superannuation was put in the hands of unions. Mm. It was put in the hands of, like, you know, banks are terrible at it, but they are better than John Howard was with the funds. And so there is trillions of dollars sitting around in investment that can be diverted into whatever infrastructure program is required.
But aren't like super funds? So, for example, whatever industry you're working, right? Everyone pays whatever that 9-10%. Like your employer pays that 9-10% into the super fund. But these super funds are really scattered. So even if you can sort of convince a few members of the Australian public to invest in certain kinds of super funds that will get, which will invest in infrastructure or green energy, because what you need to do is consolidate all of these super funds, which means you're gonna have to kick some financial guys' ass.
Yeah,
which means you're gonna have to like make a few people unemployed, like, you know what, your fund might be awesome and you might have made whatever, it doesn't matter. Right now we need to consolidate all of this money. We're a country of only 22 million people, so there's not a lot of people. So whatever people there is, if we had like one consolidated superannuation fund that was managed and guaranteed by the government, right? So then that makes me lose fear that what if like my fund invests it poorly and then I lose all my money. So it's guaranteed by the government, right? And then the government pretty much, just like kind of like how China is, right? The China will tell its state-owned companies that are run privately but are still Chinese-owned that you use this money to do this. So if we had that authority, or if the government of Australia had that authority of a consolidated super fund to invest it in either infrastructure or green energy, then this idea could be amazing.
Which is what Anthony Albanese is arguing for.
But how is he? Dude, this is like, he's going to have to pick huge battles. There's a lot of people that are using those super funds to make money for themselves. And all of a sudden, they won't be able to make a lot of money for themselves.
I know. But I don't think that 7% investment into renewables is that crazy of an idea, particularly when there's two big ethical super funds. So Future Super Fund and Ethical Super Fund. Those are the two superannuation funds. And they are growing very quickly because I think that a lot of people understand this, particularly in the corporate sector. A lot of them understand that renewables is a good investment. You see a lot of the people in the corporate sector that traditionally were, you know, just absolute parasites on society. Your management consultants. Bill Maher had the best line about consultants the other day. He was just like, what the fuck are consultants? Yeah. Apparently everyone in America doesn't know how to do their job. But yeah, it was them. A lot of consultants are moving out, a lot of corporate lawyers, all of these minds that were traditionally used basically to suck money out of society. They're all moving into renewables. I imagine that a lot of this is to do with the fact that they have a lot of moral guilt. But I think that the other thing is that they understand that this is the path of growth forward. And so there is this concerted effort, even within the power structure of Australia that is external to the government, that is basically saying, we don't need the government to build this energy sector, which is extremely exciting because all throughout history, you needed the government to get on board to build a power grid. There is no way that the private sector was ever going to fund coal plants because it takes, I think about, I can't remember the exact amount of years, but I think it's like 11% of its lifespan before you even start to see a profit in favorable conditions. Sometimes it can take a quarter of the coal plant's lifespan before you see them. These are coal plants that are around for 50 years.
So the whole idea of like coal energy or fossil fuel industry investment being like a quick reward as opposed to green energy being the long haul reward is a myth.
Completely not a myth. No.
You can make a cash cow on green renewables today.
Tesla batteries take a year to pay themselves off. Wind farms take 2 years. Solar farms take 1 to 5 years, depending on the solar technology that they're using.
So it's all just vested interest and lobbying of coal and these mining companies to make sure that the government subsidizes and gives them contracts. Because if they lose that lobbying and if they lose that government support, then you're saying in a free market they're going to lose out to green energy.
There is no doubt in my mind that if subsidies ended to coal plants tomorrow and then everybody goes, yeah, renewables.
So that's an optimistic thing then.
What?
That's a really good thing. Because if that is, let's say if that's true, then green energy is going to win in the long run anyways.
Green energy is going to win in the long run. The problem is we don't have a long run. We've got 12 years to do something about climate change. And thankfully, what I think is that everybody understands this, and there's just a few amoral people in governments, like in the Republicans in the US and the Liberal Party here, and they will just do anything to keep their donors happy, completely soulless human beings. But I was always of the opinion that people that work for Energy Australia and Transgrid were also part of this cabal. No, it's just the mining industry. The mining industry wants subsidies to coal. They want new coal plants built. But the energy providers realize it's in their financial interest to have renewable energy because it costs a quarter the amount of money to produce as coal and nuclear does. And it's getting cheaper. And every time you build, every time the amount of wind power and solar power doubles in this country, the price drops by a quarter. So when it goes from 19% to 35%, the price is going to drop by a quarter, meaning that it's going to cost like it's going to cost a fifth of the price of coal and nuclear. And then when it doubles to 60%, it's going to cost a sixth of the price. It's cheaper and cheaper to produce. And on top of that, the technology is exponentially increasing. All these people always use this example where they say that, oh, according to the ICPP report, we need nuclear energy to get to our climate targets. That was an IPCC report from 2010. By 2018, that same panel was saying nuclear energy has just failed. It's just flailed from crazy promise to crazy promise, hasn't fulfilled any of its targets. Like in India, for instance, how it's 20 years behind its target of getting to 10,000 megawatts an hour. Now it's at 7,000 megawatts.
But also, like,
and that was
like
its 2,000 target.
At a shallow but level, wind, but isn't that also because they suck at their job a little bit?
Who?
Indians. I mean, like, I don't mean this as like a...
Yeah, they do
like,
suck at their job.
Their expertise aren't nearly as high as Japanese expertise are, is what I'm saying.
No, but that's what I'm saying, is that the after Fukushima, when they closed down all of the nuclear power plants there, the banks wanted the nuclear power plants open because they wanted their investments paid off. And so they've been forcing that. But in that meantime, just that small little window of 2 years where they just went, oh, fuck, we need more power, it went from producing something like 5% of the nation's energy to about 15% in the span of 2 years because it was a necessity for them to invest in renewables. And now companies are just realizing this is cheaper than buying nuclear energy. We're just going to make our own solar panels for our factories and our manufacturing. And this is what's happening globally.
I think I found the grand loophole in your argument. You see, Mr. Smarty Pants, you've created this elaborate concept, and it's all based on one assumption, that climate change isn't a hoax. And I think that's where you get the things wrong, because if you take that assumption away, then all of this effort for nothing. And we're out of time.
Oh man, it's always good to know that, like, look, this is why I like this pod, because you have your worldview challenged and then you see the pieces of the puzzle that you're missing.
See you guys. Please sign up on Patreon. And while you're at it, check out this new upcoming channel, Holdsworthy Live on YouTube. You'll be pleasantly surprised.